Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today on Living Mythology, I'm proud to bring you Mythic Gaming. First, a short review. If Savage Mojo's Dogs of Hades RPG can best be described as Dune with Spartans in outer space, then Young Love Aphrodite can safely be said to be Shakespeare with Athenians on a distant planet. In this one-sheet adventure, you must help the merchant prince Parmenio steal his true love, the merchant princess Zoe, from the fortifications of her wealthy father's home. The star-crossed Parmenio and Zoe belong to rival houses, and neither family wishes to wed their fortunes to their hated enemies. Zoe's mother, Adara, is a priestess of Hera. She opposes the union and will do all she can to prevent it from happening. Ephthalia, a priestess of Aphrodite from neither house, wishes to see true love prevail and will do all she can to help. Your task is to keep the young lovers together and safe until the secretly arranged wedding at the Temple of Athena can occur. Oh, and you may need to find an extra witness or two in case you or other members of your party don't survive. Three fun and exciting scenes are outlined in this adventure, but you can easily stretch it out to four or five to further flesh out the background info, then fold the tale into your campaign. Although this adventure is essentially Romeo and Juliet with Greek temples and bounty hunters, it does provide the possibility of a happy ending, earning an Olympian thumbs up. Onwards. And please note, Dogs of Hades one-sheet Young Love Hera flips the proverbial coin and presents this tale from the opposite perspective. It'd be interesting to run both at the same time and see what happens. And now, without further ado, Tim Espy and Zach McAtee. Greetings, gentlemen. How are you today?
Doing well, yourself?
Doing phenomenally well. Glad to be speaking with both
Good
of
evening.
You.
Hello. How are you?
Good evening. Well, how are you, Tim?
I'm doing pretty well and got to enjoy the weather today, so it was nice.
Yes, it started off very cold and it got better as the day progressed. Now, what is new and exciting in the world of gaming? And I guess we'll start with playing cards and with Tim.
So we've been still doing our Magic tournaments and stuff at the store. We have our Commander Knights and our Draft Knights and a new Commander Knight as well on Saturdays. So we have another day for Commander Knights. Did I mention the new Magic set that came out last time we talked? I wasn't sure if it was out yet or not. I forget if I
Which
mentioned
one?
It passively or not. It's called the Kamigawa Neon Destiny.
I don't
it's,
believe you talked about
Cyberpunk
that one.
Ninjas. Okay, yeah, so that's the new Magic set that came out. It's probably been about a month or so, maybe. But it takes place on the Kamigawa plane, which is the Japanese adjacent style plane that Magic does. They went there probably 10 or more years ago. So we went back, and it's now more futuristic. Whereas before it was more, you know, traditional, you know, what you would think of Japanese style. But yeah, so it's been pretty cool. With there's a new heavy emphasis on vehicles again, which is like a sub creature type in the game that they brought in when we first started doing Magic around the Aether Revolt era. It's been a pretty fun set and sparked some more life back into Magic again because everybody was super excited for the new ninja cards that were part of the set.
Wow. So Magic continues to evolve and to grow, and this sounds very interesting. And as you said, you can blend the cards together. So you could have werewolves and vampires in this setting and ancient Greeks as well, I guess.
Yeah, yep. There's, I forget what the other subtype. There's some more rat subtypes in this set as well. So you have some rat rogues and some rat ninjas. so that creature subtype got some more help as well in this set.
Very cool. Anything happening on the Pokemon front?
Yep, there was also a new Pokemon set that came out around the same time as the new Magic set came out, and that one is that one's called Pokemon Brilliant Stars. So we mentioned previously the new Pokemon game that came out, Pokemon Legends Arceus.
Mm-hmm.
So this Magic set revolves around Arceus as well. So it was good timing for the game to come out, and then the cards came out almost alongside it. So it's Arceus and Charizard and a few other big heavy hitters that that are fan favorites and stuff. Because Arceus hasn't had a proper card in a long time from what I remember. So people were super excited to get that Pokemon back on a card. And the cards are really, really, really nice. The stuff that Pokemon has been coming out with the past couple of years have been really second to none, in my opinion, in terms of quality and art. And the art and everything is just absolutely amazing on the new Pokemon stuff.
Yeah, the kids love Pokemon. And every now and then in the games that I run, some of them are insistent on integrating the Pokemon into it. So we have Pokemon in ancient Greece during mythic times running around.
Yeah, for me, I collect Pokemon has, they're called full art trainer cards, where they're mm-hmm. the actual Pokemon trainers, and then, you know, they have their own abilities and stuff, but they have really nice full art trainer cards that they release. So I have them all, leading back from the very, very first one from, you know, about 8 years ago up to current. So with these new sets, they've been doing, it's a little subset inside of the set called the Trainer Gallery, where mm-hmm. there are alternate arts of cards in the set, but they have their Pokemon trainer with it in the card. So it's not just a Pokemon. So it's got some really, really nice art with the trainers that are kind of tied to the Pokemon. But yeah, like I said, the new art they've been coming out with is amazing.
Are these the same trainers that were in the cartoon?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So, the one that I got was Misty has a Starmie, so it was Misty's Starmie. So, you know, it has her on like a pool raft with Starmie in the background and everything. It's a beautiful card. It's awesome.
That sounds really great. And again, it's mind-boggling the variety that can come out of a card game, the variety of experiences. And every time you share what's coming out, I try to imagine it. And again, to me, it's mind-boggling. I remember when these cards first came out, and at the time, they seemed to be a passing fad, but it turned out that they weren't a fad at all. They stuck and became part of the gaming landscape, a very important part.
Yeah, yep. Pokemon is the highest selling like single IP thing in terms of merchandising. So Pokemon is still the most popular thing. You know, like you said, it kind of came out and it stuck around. They just did stuff right, and it waned a little bit in a few years after its, you know, initial popularity, but now it's, you know, almost more popular than it was.
And you said that the pandemic helped that a bit, you know, since people are home and not as mobile as they were, the demand for games has gone up.
Yeah, the Pokemon or the pandemic really made Pokemon go crazy. And, you know, it was getting a little tough, you know, us as retailers to, you know, find a balance, because there was a lot of stuff with, you know, like scalpers coming in and reselling stuff. So, you know, it's a hard balance of us trying to, you know, keep everything fair and safe, because, you know, I would like, you know, I don't want one person to come in and buy the entire stock out so that,
right,
you know, this other kid can't come in and get what he was looking for. But it seems like, you know, either Pokemon's printing more, or, you know, the supply chain is getting a little bit better, because, you know, we haven't, you know, been really strapped for a product where we were in the past. You know, previously, you know, you buy booster boxes that has the booster packs inside.
Mm-hmm.
you know, we would hardly get, you know, a few dozen, but now, like I said, product has been coming and we've had product available, so people can come in pretty much any time and get what they're kind of looking for. So it's been getting better for us as retailers, so it's been helping out.
Are there any other card games that have come out this month?
We still dabble a little bit with the Dragon Ball Super card game, which is based off of Dragon Ball. And then we also do a little bit of the Digimon card game that came out, unfortunately, during the pandemic. So their popularity was really strong, but it's kind of waned a little bit. But their cards are also really, really nice. They're doing some really cool stuff, too. They're not our big sellers, but we like to keep some stuff in for the regulars that come in looking for it.
So Pokemon Magic got built up, and Digimon got not as built up during the pandemic.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, when it first came out, it was really hot because it was a new game again, where they kind of brought it back from the dead. It was a whole new game, but it's hard to start a TCG like that with no real in-store tournament support. Because back when it came out, there was no in-store play or anything, so you had to do a lot of. They were trying to do some stuff online, and Digimon got it down pretty well, like their online tournaments. They're doing a lot of stuff through the official Discord, running their tournaments through there and everything. So they were doing a pretty good job with it, and that was helping it along. But it's been taking a little bit of time to get tournament play in store with them. So hoping that they can figure some stuff out. But we'll see.
We shall see. Zach, any good card games on your end? Or any new card games?
I just backed one on Kickstarter today, actually. It's not a trading card game. It's a trick-taking game, kind of like Hearts or Spades, if you've ever played those. But the idea is you're essentially betting on how many tricks that you think you can win during each round. And then you either get points or lose points based off of how close to your bet you were. And I think Tim would like it because it's called Nine Lives and it's themed around cats. And I paid $4 extra to get the upgraded version, which comes with four gigantic wooden little cats in different poses that represent your bets.
Nice.
So you're a cat person.
Yes, I am. Yep.
Awesome. So I'm trying to visualize that. So it's a card game, and do the cats that you pose that are in different poses come into play at all, or are they just decorative?
They're your bid markers. So when
your bid markers.
When you're betting on
how, got it.
Yeah. So you'll take the cat of your color to mark how many tricks you think you'll win, and then you put it there. And they made the board looks like a rug, and so they're all laying down on the rug wherever you put them. I'll send you guys a link to it because the art is it's a nice mix of cute but also cool.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Well, I'm a cat person too, and we're dog people as well. We've had dogs now for over a decade. So that sounds like fun. How about any expansions to the other card sets that you've spoken about?
I know that the Lord of the Rings living card game that we've talked about in the past, I know that they've just come out with a new expansion or a new character, I think, Zach. I forget exactly what it was. I was talking to my distributor salesman friend about it.
Zach, are you still with us?
Sorry, my mic was malfunctioning. From what I've seen, what they did is they re-released the core set to kind of breathe fresh life into it and get more people back into it. It has some quality of life changes, and I think they included some cards that didn't come in the original starter set. But then the other thing they did that's new for this like resurgence is they actually are selling now pre-made decks. So they have, I think, four at the moment. They're, you know, it's the dwarf deck, the elf deck, the hobbit deck, and I think like the men deck. And each one focuses on a specific mechanic. So with the dwarves, for instance, they have a mechanic called delving where they can search through the deck for certain cards. And so it's like a 40, 50 card pre-made deck that you can play right out of the box or use to kind of build from if you like the mechanics.
And how easy is that to integrate with like the Lord of the Rings role-playing games and board games that have come out of the years? Is it something that you weave into that? I like mixing games together.
I think this is,
no.
This one's definitely more of a standalone. It's very, I showed it to Tim once. It's very much like a card game. You could possibly try and maybe use it as the basis for a session if you were playing in like a Tolkien universe, but because the characters that you're playing are all like the characters from the Tolkien universe. So, you know, if you were doing something where you were playing an RPG as the existing characters, I could see maybe possibly saying, oh, okay, well, you know, this is one of the quests in the card game, and I really liked it when I had these three people as my heroes on this quest, and maybe I'll write a session about that.
Okay.
Right.
Gotcha. So are they doing a wizard's deck also, or an orc's deck, or a goblin's deck at some point?
So at the moment, they did not announce a wizard deck that I saw. I know that there's a lot less of them, obviously, because there's only like five in the entire universe, so they can only have so many different wizard cards in the set.
But
what they do that's really nice is, the wizard cards are always very potent, and one of the cool things that the system does is, I guess the closest way to describe it is there's four suits. Each one represents kind of a different strength, so there's leadership.
Okay.
Leadership, war, I can't remember, lore, and I think maybe hope. But so there's four different kind of spheres that you might pull cards from. And one of the things they do is they'll reprint, or not reprint, they'll print multiple versions of the same character as different ones of those spheres. So the original Aragorn is part of the leadership sphere. But then they later released, oh, here's an Aragorn who's a war Aragorn, so he's more focused on attack. Or here's a Gandalf who used to be neutral. He didn't have like a color, basically, and now here's a Gandalf that does have a color. So they do a lot of interesting things where they'll like twist them, and then usually they'll take a mechanic the original like release of the card had and give it like a different version of the mechanic.
Okay. And you had talked about the uncertain fate of the role-playing game for Lord of the Rings. Is that stabilized or established the course?
I was going to bring that up, Zach, but that's the thing you got.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of issues on that front, both personally and just with them as a whole. So first off, the system uses D12s and D6s. So the idea is every time you make a roll, you're rolling a D12, which is called the feat die, and then you're rolling a number of D6s equal to however many points you have in a skill. So if I have 3 points in song, I'll roll a D12 and 3 D6s when I'm attempting a song roll, and then I will add the result of all those together to try and beat the target number.
Okay.
So one of the things they included in the Kickstarter were dice sets. So it's a basic set that's it's not white, it's I guess bone is a good way to put it, like that kind of almost
ivory,
like yellowish white. So that was the basic one, and then they also had an additional one you could add on that was a black set with red lettering. So I had both in my order. They ended up misprinting all of the D12s.
Oh no.
So the D12s for the system only go through 1 to 10, and then instead of 11 and 12, they have the Eye of Sauron and Gandalf's Rune. And so Gandalf's Rune is like an auto success. Eye of Sauron isn't always an auto fail, but is, you know, it counts as a 0 if it's not an auto fail, so it's always bad. So what they did was they accidentally misprinted the 1 as an 11 on all the D12s in everyone's orders. And so that's, like, realistically, it's not that big of an issue. You can still play with them. You can, you know, just pretend it's a one. But they didn't really handle it well. So they made an announcement about it, you know, letting people know that they were aware because people had started receiving their dice with this error. And in the books, Bilbo has his 111th birthday towards the beginning of the Fellowship. And so, like, instead of acknowledging, oh, we made a mistake here, we'll try to fix this, whatever, they were like, oh, yeah, it got misprinted, but you can just say you rolled an 11d1 now, and it's fine. Ha-ha, it's a feature, not a bug. And the backers did not really like that. So,
no.
Literally, like, 6 hours later, the CEO of the entire company put out, like, a statement saying that they were giving everyone either a choice to have free new sets of the dice sent to them once they got them reprinted, or like a coupon for their digital store. But so that was already an issue. And so then I was waiting for my physical copy to arrive and waiting and waiting, and like all the people I'm playing with, I was one of the last people to actually get the physical copies. And I did like the all-in thing. I did like, I think it was 170, something like that, $170 tier, you know, so I had like, there was two versions of the core rulebook. The basic one, which is available for retail purchase, and there was a one-time printing of a limited edition, like fake leather-bound version for the Kickstarter. So I had backed for that, and they have a box starter set that comes with like some small booklets and cards and stuff like that. So I had set it up so that you can get like a text when the package is delivered. I was sitting at home. I was waiting because I was like, oh man, it should be getting here some point today. I get the notification that it was delivered, and I immediately like just run down the stairs to go grab it from the porch. And right off the bat, I'm like, okay, weird. I don't see the guy who delivered this anywhere. It's almost like he booked it. And then I look at the package, and there's a gigantic hole knocked in the side of it.
Oh no!
So I took it upstairs, and I was like, oh, come on, please. But sure enough, I opened it up, and that nice limited edition leather-bound starter set, or collector's edition core book, was bent in half.
Oh,
And then the starter set was crushed, like someone had, like, you know, put a huge amount of weight on it in, like, the top corner and just, like, crushed it down, like, a quarter of a tight. And everything inside of it was bent and damaged, like... it was just, I was extremely upset.
I
took pictures of it, yeah, and I made sure I didn't open, like, I was like, I'm not even taking the plastic off because I, you know, I want to be able to prove that I didn't do this. So, like, I took pictures of everything in the plastic wrap, and I sent them in, and to their credit, they responded pretty much immediately, and I was figuring, oh, okay, well, they probably won't ship out replacements until they've resolved all of the outstanding Kickstarter orders, you know? So I was expecting maybe get the replacements towards the end of the summer or something like that, but they got them to me within, I think, a week and a half or less of me contacting them. So I think that because of their already relatively bad public relations issue with the dice, I think they were kind of in like panic mode to be like, okay, we need to make sure there's no more problems.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you got the better copy, and I know I've received packages that were damaged in transit, and it's very disappointing, especially if you've been waiting for something for a while, and especially if it's something you really wanted. It's
yeah.
And as you pointed out, not everybody is as sensitive to the public relations, and I've had some really not that great experiences with waiting for items to be replaced or refunded.
Yeah, and they did impress me with how quick they handled it, because it actually ended up, I didn't even need to send them the pictures, because there was a slip of paper inside the box for the company that packaged everything.
Okay.
Because they had outsourced that to, you know, a packaging company. And so I had I'd emailed them at the email inside the package and sent them the pictures. And they got back to me and said, oh, we're sorry to hear that. Please contact the publisher. So then they had like a form on their website and you couldn't attach anything to it directly. So I wrote in and I was like, hey, I have pictures. I have them in JPEGs, PDFs, whatever you need, just let me know, et cetera. And they didn't ask for anything. They just immediately emailed me like the next morning saying that they were processing a replacement shipment to me. So they moved very quick and it was a very painless process.
Good. Have you guys played it yet?
So I've been playing it since last August, I think. August or September. Whenever they released the alpha rules, we started doing an online game. And so we switched over to the finalized rule set once they released those in digital format. But I like it a lot. I think it's definitely – it's a different kind of system than – what you might think of like right off the bat as a tabletop RPG. It's much more character driven and focused. And there's the way I try to describe it to people is Tolkien's universe is a very moralistic universe. And that really carries over into the mechanics that are baked into the game. So whereas in a typical D&D session, maybe you would, like break into a tomb to see if there's any magic weapons inside. Or, if somebody attacks you, you just kill them outright, because they attacked you. So it's fair. But in this universe, those actions would actually reflect on how corrupted your character is becoming mechanically. And so you have a stat called Shadow, which is the wear and tear that traveling in the world and encountering these various forces of evil like have on your soul. And so if you were to say, well, I'm going to break into someone's revered tomb site and steal their stuff, that's going to give you shadow. If bandits jump out and ambush you and you defeat them in combat and they've surrendered or they're unarmed and then you were to kill them, that would be a lot of shadow. it's definitely a specific flavor of story, but for people who like that, it's a very, very good representation of his work and of the universe that he built.
I remember that those type of mechanics initially started coming out with the Robert E. Howard-based games and the Lovecraft-based games. And the Lovecraft-based games, it evolved into like a Sanity, where you're exposed to things that might deteriorate your sanity as you progress through the game. And in the Robert E. Howard games, the more you're exposed to magic or the more you perform magic in certain magical related actions, the more corrupted you became. And this manifested in physical changes to your character and also, psychological quirks for your character, as well as, succumbing to the corruption in ways that affected your magic as well. So I'm glad to see these mechanics are still in there and still evolving.
Yeah, and I think they did a really good job with it in this. The idea is there's no classes in this system, and there's no races. So the idea is you pick a culture instead of a race, and then you pick a calling instead of a class. So a culture, the core book in this edition only has, I think, 6 to start with. But like in the first edition, they had, I think, around like 20 to 25. They could be like, oh, it's the hobbits from this specific area, or oh, it's the dwarves from this specific area, as opposed to saying every dwarf is a dwarf. You know what I mean? So you get different bonuses depending on which culture you came from. And then your calling is basically your way of saying what has brought my character to travel. Are they a captain, someone who looks to be a leader of people? Are they a warden, someone who's trying to protect people close to them from being attacked by forces of evil? Perhaps they're a treasure hunter, or my character is a scholar, so he's traveling around to like learn other knowledge from across the world. And so whatever calling you pick, you get a couple bonuses from it. So you get a few, I think 2 or 3 positive things from it, and then it determines what your shadow path is. So for instance, my character as a scholar has the shadow path Lore of Secrets. So as I get corrupted by shadow, I start kind of becoming more reclusive, more traitorous eventually. So it's, they basically build a 4-step progression path. So the like you can have what they call a bout of madness, which is when you become too corrupted and you basically lose control of your character for a brief second. They do something based off of whatever triggered the bout of madness, and then their shadow resets to zero, but now they have a permanent negative flaw from their shadow path.
Hmm.
So I recently had my first one, so now my character is haughty, so they have trouble accepting advice from other people now.
Hmm.
And then, like, if it happens again, I think the next one is, I can't remember the name, but it's something about, like, not offering advice and everything, about being very much like, no, I'm just going to do my own thing and I'm going to let you do your own thing, even if I know it's a bad idea. And then it eventually culminates in the final one in this path is traitorous, which is like you can't really be trusted because you've gotten so obsessed with trying to know more than everyone else and all this kind of stuff. And then if you have all four of the negative traits from whatever your calling is, if you have one more bout of madness, that's the end of your character. So for pretty much everything except for elves, that just means your character has basically given into madness completely and kind of disappeared into the wilds in some manner. For the elves, it means you've taken too much damage to your soul, effectively, so you need to leave Middle-earth and head over to the Undying Lands. But either way, that's like the end of your character. And so the system puts a lot of emphasis on trying to pick a good point for your adventurer to stop adventuring, you know, before they become so corrupt that every good bit that they have done before is tainted by the person they've become. They put a lot of focus into things like you can raise an heir. So one of my fellow players just recently took that action. So he, you know, you basically start grooming a second character who doesn't necessarily need to be a literal descendant, an heir. It could be just, you know, in his case, I think it's one of his elven cousins kind of thing. But you start building up a character, and then you can actually take any XP that you earn that you would spend on your current character, and you can put them into a bank for the second character.
Oh, wow.
And then eventually, when you retire your first one, you can also say, oh, okay, well, this one item that my character had, it's now the heirloom that gets passed down as so-and-so's sword or so-and-so's shield, that kind of thing. And so that will carry a mechanical benefit as it gets passed down to your descendant.
Oh, that is cool. That sounds like a fascinating mechanic and a way to run a campaign also.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun so far. We've only had two bouts of madness so far because we've been relatively lucky in avoiding taking. None of us have voluntarily done actions to take shadow, but there are always things where perhaps an evil creature is using some sort of fell sorcery on you, or you know, if you see something horrific, that can give you shadow. So again, it represents less that you're evil and more just this is the wear and tear that you will get from being on the road and dealing with these kinds of events. And so, like, we've had a lot of those kinds of things happen. Only one person in the party has voluntarily taken actions to get shadow, and he's never read and he's never watched the Lord of the Rings universe, and he very much came from more dungeon crawl heavy systems.
Uh-huh.
So he's having a bit of a hard time adjusting to the fact that, but no, these guys, they we fought them. I can just murder them after they've surrendered. That's okay. It's totally all right. maybe not in this world.
Yeah, I can see that. We've talked about murder hobos in the past in some games. Seem to encourage murder hobos, and that leads a good segue to Tim. Anything new on the D&D front, or any new books coming out, or any new supplements or supplies?
Yeah, actually, I picked up something for my own personal collection, which is kind of rare for me in the terms of RPG stuff. But I was talking to that same salesman friend. It's a tabletop RPG, like kind of like a rules light kind of thing where you can run you know, your own campaign or one shot through the stuff that's in the book, or you can pull pieces of the book and use it in other stuff. But it's it's called Morkborg. So Morkborg, two words. Morkborg, really cool. And they kind of label themselves as like a fantasy RPG kind of thing. I didn't read too much about it yet. The main draw for me was the art in the book. I sent Zach some pictures of it, but it's got some really cool, funky, really dark kind of art for it. It's really, really nice if you want to look it up real quick so you can see. But like it gives you in the book, it gives you, you know, some characters and some, you know, a handful of enemies and a bunch of different spells and stuff. But the tagline, you know, it says that like you're kind of like lost souls looking for redemption kind of thing. So it takes place in some sort of post-apocalyptic fantasy realm. But like I said, I didn't read too much about it. It was just the art that we were talking about. And I was just like, oh my God, yes, I'll have to get this. It fits into my my aesthetic very well. But yeah, so that's the main RPG thing for me that I picked up personally. But in terms of other stuff store wise, there wasn't anything that was coming out that I remember that came out. There's stuff coming out, within the next month, but of course I can't remember the name of it. It's some long name, but I forget what it, what it ties into. Too. I think it's just a supplemental, side story.
Yeah, I'm at the website now, morkborg.com. It looks very fascinating.
Yeah, real bright. The bright yellow. Like the book is, it's not real thick or anything. It's probably 50 pages or so. But real bright yellow and real striking art and stuff. It's, on the occultish side, if you can picture that kind of aesthetic.
Yeah, the more I've been doing role-playing games and the simpler my mechanics have become over time. And I know, like, with D&D, because a lot of kids want to learn, like, Dungeons & Dragons specifically. So I have a really streamlined version, that's essentially the core mechanic, just to start teaching that first in role-playing. And then I introduce other rules as we kind of go along. And I found that once they learn the core mechanic and the really basic rules, the kids are very reluctant to embrace the more complex rules. So, they enjoy the very streamlined version, which just basically answers, did you succeed or fail? and then just move along with the story. So I have some complex procedures that I've created for certain things, but other than that, just resolving the situation quickly and moving seems to be the preferred thing. So I've been contemplating that of lately and seeing what that tells me about the hobby, for me anyway, and for the people I play with.
Yeah, it's kind of the same for me too, where, the games that I prefer, the one-shot kind of things, like the ones that Zach runs, where, you go for the night and you kind of play for the story, and it's kind of very rules light. And, like you said, like you're just rolling for success or fail. Did you do the thing or did you not do the thing? And what is the bad thing that happens when you don't succeed? And that's kind of where I'm at and what I like, too. So I'm right with you. Or I'm right with them, too.
Yeah, those are good, and the critical hits and the critical failures are great too. Like the kids were playing the other day, and they wanted to do something that I would have just considered not possible. I couldn't visualize it, but the kid rolled a 20, so it's like, okay, fine.
All right.
You succeeded, and I described how it happened. I came up with something that sounded plausible, and they succeeded, Again, that is the element of fun, but for me too, I'm finding this, did you succeed or did you fail in what you described? It's just enough to keep the story moving along and everybody's happy with that.
Yep.
Are they coming out with any, like, they were coming out for a while, Dungeons & Dragons, with a bunch of, like, culture-specific books, like they did with Before Theros, but they'd come out with, like, a horror campaign place, then they came out with a mystery one, so they kept coming out with a series of books that kind of put you in different types of circumstances or in different types of worlds. Are they still doing that?
Right, yeah, I remember, like, Mysteries at Candlekeep and stuff, yeah, where it was, like, kind of more contained things in the whole book. They're not that I've seen. Like I said, the new book that's coming out, I remember enough that it's not that. It's just a quote-unquote another book. But the new Magic set that's coming out at the end of the year, I think they're probably going to do something with that. If they don't, it'd be a big missed opportunity because it's very, it's like mob, like Art Deco style. So kind of like roaring 20s, you know, 30s era mob bosses and mobsters kind of stuff. So it's called New Capenna is the name of the place. So there's a bunch of demons that, like, the demons are one gang and there's angels that are another gang. So I think there's a lot of stuff that they can do with D&D for that, certainly. So I'm sure that they're going to come out with a book out of there.
And any news on D&D 6th edition? I'd heard rumors about that. There are always rumors about new editions of D&D. Or 5.5.
Oh, really? No, I haven't. Yeah, because it's, what, 5e still, right?
Yeah, we're still 5e's proven very versatile.
Right, yeah, I think that's kind of what brought a lot of people in because, you know, the what was it, 3.5 was the big
yeah,
one.
Three and 3.5 yeah. were really good too. They opened up doors to like a million different things, and they were cumbersome in some ways. So I used to just ignore the cumbersome rules. But 5 is proving very versatile as well. Not as many third party developers, although there are more than their share. Like 3 had was seen mostly third party developers, if I remember correctly. 5 is not like that, but it still has a lot of third-party development going on.
Yeah, 3 had – it was notorious for just millions and millions of books from everybody
yeah.
under the sun. And so somebody would come to the table with this class you'd never heard of, and they're like, oh, yeah, it's in this book. You're like
– Yeah, too many books to own with that. How about video games? I've been interested in integrating some video game material into the game I'm playing with kids because they play video games, and I've been looking at Phoenix Rising, the Immortals, and also the yep. second game that you guys, especially Tim, talked about with Hades. So the only problem is that the some of the characters or their weapons are like a generation after the quest for the Golden Fleece, which I'm currently running. So I have to think about that. But the stories seem pretty engaging from what I've seen from YouTube videos. And I could definitely incorporate elements so that if the kids go up and play the game, you know, they'll get a laugh and say, and understand certain things that happen in the role-playing game a little better.
All right. Yeah, I think from what I've seen that I think you would like Immortals a lot. And our employee, Scott, I don't know if you've got to meet him yet or not, but he plays that game a lot, and he speaks very highly of Immortals. And then, yeah, we've talked about Hades before as well. We didn't have any copies for PS4, by the way. I checked for
okay.
you on Sunday.
I'll keep questing for it. Hades seemed to have a really tight story from what I've seen on the YouTube videos and the reviews I've read. The story is phenomenally well put together, and even if you fail, you get contributions to the overall story, and failing is a way of winning in certain ways. So I really liked everything I've come across with Hades.
Yeah, yep, yeah, it's a roguelike game, so any progression that you make, even if you die, that progression gets saved to your character that you're replaying with. So they do a really good job, and I love how they tie in, you know, how you die into the story, so that it is canon that you die. You know, it's just this, not just oh you die and you start over, but there's a story element to it when you die. So it's a really fun game, and I think you'll like the cast of characters and the voice acting and the script that they had for it. There's some good lines in there.
And Phoenix Rising gave everybody Greek accents, which I thought was great.
Being
Greek,
okay.
the accents were very authentic sounding, so that was a very big plus.
That's great. Like I said, I was aware of it when it came out, but I never explored it personally.
It was done by the same people who did Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
Right.
But they were talking about it for a very long time. It didn't have the same name. The name is something they came out with later. And also, I believe initially it was less cartoony than the final product. It looks good. It's a very colorful and very artistic game. Initially, I was turned off by the cartooniness, but after I watched a few videos, so what they did, it was like, no, that doesn't really interfere with the story. It actually enhances it in some ways. But their mythology is, even with a more obscure mythology, they developed it and made it cohesive in a very unique and interesting way. Again, I'm exploring that world mostly through YouTube videos at present.
Yeah, I haven't played anything recently, unfortunately. It's just been more doing life stuff. But there's a couple games that are coming up that I've been waiting quite a few years for, actually. I don't know if I mentioned it in the past, but it's an Eastern European developer. I don't know if they're Polish or Ukrainian, but it's a game called Atomic Heart. And it's they haven't released any story stuff. It's just gameplay stuff, but the visuals and everything are what it's about. Kind of futuristic. Are you familiar with a game called Outer Worlds by chance? It was made by the people that made the original Fallout games.
You've spoken about that before, and I remember when it came out, you'd spoken about it.
Right. The art style kind of reminds me of that, but way more like cyborg twisted, you know, like the Weyland-Yutani, what do they call them? Like, they're not replicants because that's Blade Runner, but the ones from Aliens, the cyborgs from Aliens.
They're in the same universe.
Sure what the name for them is.
Yeah, I don't know what the names are either, but those take place in the same universe, so they might as well be replicants.
A lot of the enemies are kind of based off of that to give you an idea of what they look like. And the art is very twisted and crazy looking. And it's a first-person shooter with, like, melee mechanics and looks like some RPG elements and stuff. But like I said, they haven't released any story stuff, but the visuals and are very captivating and kind of fit into my aesthetic wheelhouse very well. So I was talking about it in the store and with somebody, a regular customer, and I was like, let me show you a video really quick. And I pulled it up on YouTube, and it was a brand new gameplay trailer that released with a release date for it. And it was like, oh, my God, please be this year. And it flashed up, and it said, 2022. So the end of the year, hopefully.
I hope so.
Because, like I said, it's been three, 4 years probably since they first announced it. So I'm excited for that one. And then the other game that came out, Zach, have you played Elden Ring yet? I know you're a Dark Souls guy.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was only next gen.
Okay. Yep. There's the Dark Souls series, where it's From Software is the name of the company that released it. But it's a very popular, you know, extremely hard, very punishing game. But they came out with their new highly anticipated game called Elden Ring, where it's just, it's a take on Dark Souls, but it's in an open world setting. So Dark Souls, it's not linear, but, you know, you have a path that you're going down. But Elden Ring is just kind of open, and you explore, and you have to fight the bosses that you see along the way. Like I said, those games are a little bit too hard for me. takes a lot of patience and stuff, which I unfortunately don't have too much of. So my buddy's really good with those games. So we hop on Discord and we chat, and he plays while I check it out, because it's a game that I love watching, because the monsters and the big bosses, the character designs are always insane. They're really, really, really cool. So I like to see what cool stuff they come up with.
That sounds like the Elder Scrolls. One of the things I liked when that – I haven't played Elder Scrolls in quite a while, but I remember when it came out with the first Daggerfall Arena and the earlier games. One of the great things about it was you could follow the story and do the adventure they gave you, or you could ignore it totally and do whatever you wanted to do. And I happen to like that that style of gaming. I haven't played it in a while, but I remember I used to enjoy that. You know, it's like, I don't want to go on this quest, so I don't have to. I can do something else.
Yeah, that's the one thing that the Elder Scrolls games and, like, the Bethesda games in general do really well. It's the same thing with Fallout, too, where you can get your first quest as soon as you leave the first vault, and you don't have to do it for 100 hours if you don't want to. You can just go do everything else. And then you'd be like, oh, okay, I'm ready to do the story now.
Anything on your end, Zach, with video games? I know you're not the biggest video game player, but...
I've recently been replaying through Hollow Knight, which is a really good platformer that came out, at this point, like 7 years ago, Tim?
Yeah, I was going to say 6-7 years.
But it's very well put together. It's a very precise platformer. The controls are solid. The art style is great. It's got this like hand-drawn art style. There's very little dialogue, and what dialogue and lore there is, you kind of have to piece together as you go, which I always like. And the music in particular for the game is just incredible.
Oh, wow. I have to check that out. If you could provide a link, I'd appreciate that. I've been having a yen to play Diablo again. But Diablo 1, not so much. I wanted to play Diablo 2, but when I went to play Diablo 2 a couple of years ago, it took away my ability to play Diablo 2, and now they fixed it, and I think I need to rebuy it. So I'm kind of miffed at them for taking away one of my favorite games. So I really haven't looked into rebuying and replaying the fixed Diablo 2.
Yeah, because they came out with the Diablo 2 remastered version that my same friend was playing as well. So if you're looking, that's probably the way to play, because it fixed some stuff, and you can flip-flop between the new graphics and the old graphics if you like. But Diablo 4 should be coming out somewhat soon. I'm waiting for that. We're going to be grinding through that for a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I think my Diablo days might be over. I wasn't that pleased with Diablo 3. Too many things to read. You know, Diablo is one of those games that in part is enjoyable because it's mindless. And there were way too many things to read in Diablo 3. So I'll have to wait and see with Diablo 4. Then they announced that they were doing it on telephones only for a while or something. I don't remember. But,
yeah, that was a talk about a PR nightmare, Zach. everybody was expecting, like, this was years ago, and there was like a big conference where they were doing, you know, Blizzard releases, and everybody was expecting Diablo stuff, and they, you know, they showed a Diablo screen and some gameplay and stuff, and it was like, you know, mobile only, and, you know, people started booing and everything live at the event, and the presenter like looked at everybody and was like, what, you don't have phones? And then that like blew up and became like a meme. became a meme in itself. You know, what, you don't have phones?
I didn't even play Conan when it was on the phone, so I would bring
right.
it up on the phone.
I think they showed a couple things my buddy was saying in that they kind of streamlined some stuff from Diablo 3. So I think your issue with it seems to be a known thing where, like you were saying, like there's so many subsystems and systems that had paragraphs of text for each thing that you had to read. It wasn't just a quick like drag and drop, you know, oh, this one's better. You have to read paragraphs of stuff.
Right.
But it seemed like the inventory management stuff was a little bit more streamlined in the little thing that they showed for 4.
Well, I'll watch YouTube videos and see what happens. They might win me back. They might have lost me for good. But I just looked at the clock. We only have a couple of minutes left, and I'd like to give everybody a chance to share their contact information. So we'll start with Tim.
So for us, you can find us Level 1 Games on Facebook and on Instagram. We've been posting our now that we're doing tournaments and stuff, we've been trying to be better about posting our tournament schedules up on there. So we usually ask people to give us a call to get your name on the list because we're still, having a limit on how many people we have in the store and everything. Hopefully it looks starting to look a little bit better, so it looks like we can start returning to somewhat normal, hopefully. You know, I don't want to say it too soon, but we post everything on Facebook and Instagram, any new trades or video game trades or card products, D&D stuff, anything we throw up on there. And if you have any questions, you can feel free to send us a message or give us a call.
Thank you very much. And I can vouch for the place that Level 1 Games is an awesome place to shop, an awesome place to look around, and an awesome place to be. Zach?
You can always find me on Facebook or send me an email at mrmunnin@gmail.com.
Thank you very much. You sent me the link, so thank you very much. And I'm going to, one of the first things I'm going to do after we finish is look up the cat game with the cards and the cat pieces. Thanks to both of you. As always, I had a great time speaking with you, and I learned a lot. And hopefully next time I'm in the area, I'll be able to drop by the store. And again, thank you very much. I had a really great time.
Thank you so much.
Always,
it was wonderful, as always.
And thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you clicked on the link and found yourself here, whether you called and you're patiently waiting in our queue, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Until next time, be well. Bye-bye, everybody.